6 o'clock, we'll call the meeting to order. Will the clerk please call the roll?
You bet. Mark?
Here.
Jeff?
Here.
Brandy?
Here.
Jay?
Here.
Chelsea?
Here.
Taylor?
Here.
Bob?
Here.
Okay, we have a full agenda with Member Mucci calling in. It's now time for the voluntary pledge of allegiance.
Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay. Now, time for approval of minutes. We only have minutes from one meeting for approval tonight, and that was from December 2nd, 2019. I would entertain a motion to approve those minutes.
So moved.
Second.
Okay, motion's been made by Member Stanton Gregor, seconded by Member Morrell. All those in favor of approving those minutes, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Okay, so those minutes are approved. Now it's time for amendment and or approval of tonight's meeting agenda. I'd entertain a motion to approve the meeting agenda as presented.
So move.
Second.
Motion made by Member Morrell, seconded by Member Lynn. And seeing no changes to the agenda, doesn't look like, we'll move forward as presented. If everybody's in favor, say aye.
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 Aye. Okay, we'll move forward with the agenda as presented. Next item on the agenda is item 5, and that's public hearings. There are no public hearings tonight, so we'll go to item 6, and that's bid awards. There's no bid awards this evening, so that brings us up to item 7, which is persons to be heard related to items on today's agenda. So anybody that would like to speak, please step forward, state your name and who you represent. Mr. Lynch. And we have a 5-minute limit on this, so.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Mayor, Mr. Mayor, members of the Assembly. My name is Brian Lynch. I'm here representing Rivers Without Borders this evening. British Columbia is preparing a remediation plan for the Tulsiquatchie mine. We haven't seen it yet. Theoretically, it's going to come out. Well, we thought it would be out by now, but probably will come out within the next couple of months. And what this resolution before you is just to it's kind of a follow-up resolution to a sign-on letter that you signed on to back in April, encouraging the administration to keep basically BC's feet to the fire on cleaning up the Tulsiquatchie. Well, they're in the process of doing that. We're hopeful, it's kind of, like I said, we're hopeful that the plan will be out here in the next couple of months. And this resolution is just to encourage the administration to be really transparent about this plan. We know it's probably going to be sent to state agencies, DNR, ADF&G, DEC. We've talked to DNR about this, and they have no real problem with being relatively transparent on getting this information out. We think we're not asking for a really hard comment period, like a 30 or 60 day period, but we just don't want the plan to be kept behind closed doors in the dark. We think that the downstream users should be should have an idea of what is in that plan before it's actually approved. Remediation and cleanup of Tulsiquatchie is one of the top priorities for the transboundary region. It's been, it's, Senator Sullivan has really taken this on and turned it into a primary concern. And he had a quote back on November 19th of 2018. He says, "I'm encouraged to see that the BC government is taking a more active role in the long overdue cleanup of the Tulsiquatchie mine. So it's a priority with our delegation too." So basically, it's just to try to have some transparency in this approval process. Like I said, we're not asking for any hard comment period. What the state would actually do probably is somewhat vague right now. We don't know exactly how they would handle this, but we're just this resolution is just to encourage them to try to be as transparent as possible. We're gonna have this resolution in a couple other communities, also in other communities in Southeast. So, but anyway, thank you. That's all I have. If you have any questions.
Thank you for your testimony. Is there any questions of Mr. Lynch? Thanks for keeping their feet to the fire.
Thank you.
Anyone else in the audience who would like to testify on items on today's agenda?
Hi, good evening.
Who you represent, please?
My name's Dan Sullivan, and I'm here representing myself. I wasn't able to make the last meeting. The day meetings I can't make, so I wanted to testify on item G on the roadless letter. I did get to listen, and I appreciated all the comments that were put forth by the members. Just wanted to give my two cents, though, and get it on the record. Lived in Petersburg for 40 years. I've been all over this Ranger District. I was a pre-sale technician and a timber sale administrator for 15 years here, 80s and 90s, so I've seen a lot of the country that we're talking about. I've walked a lot of these watersheds. And it's my feeling that the best and highest use of this land is to remain roadless. So I support alternative one, the no action alternative. You guys did a good job of talking about logging, current logging practices, and the economics of logging on the Tongass these days. And I don't think I need to go into that. Of a bigger concern that I heard some members mention was other uses, mining, hydro, transportation. At the last meeting with the Forest Service, the roadless meeting, we were told that of every exemption that was applied for has been granted so far. I think they said 59 exemptions. I'm not sure of that number, but that's what I think I remember. So it's my belief that if we have needs for infrastructure changes, I feel confident, at least according to the Forest Service, that those exemptions would be listened to and considered. So that's not a particular concern of mine. I do have concerns about guidelines, and we live in an era of hyper deregulation. I think there's a huge push right now to move some of this stuff through without full consideration. When you build a road, you cut a tree here on the Tongass, that's 100 years. It's there for 100 years. What it does to the soil, we don't even know whether we can even get even a second cut out of a second grow stand. So I think those stands need to stay the way they are. They're there. If for some reason we need them in the future, they're there for us. But right now, I would encourage you to support the no action alternative. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Sullivan. Anyone else in the audience that would like to testify, please come forward. This is on items related to the agenda, so.
Hello, my name is Richard Burke, and I'm here representing myself. I think the current OHV ban is illogical. Why is it okay to ride an ATV in this town when it's icy and snowy, but not okay when it's warm, sunny, and dry? Does it actually get more dangerous to ride an ATV when road conditions improve? Where's the logic in that? I have a motorcycle license. I can legally ride my two-wheeler when it's icy and snowy, but I have common sense. I choose to leave my bike parked when it's slick. How is an ATV any different? Does the ATV cause me to make bad decisions? It's bigger than some motorcycles, and it won't fall over if it hits a patch of ice. In 2017, I attempted to get the borough to allow OHVs on borough streets. I went to several assembly meetings and solicited input from the assembly and the former police chief. I didn't have much luck. This issue is very important to me because I think it'll make Petersburg a better place. So I didn't give up. I spent countless hours learning about Alaska state laws pertaining to OHV use on public roads. I scoured municipal codes from around the state before I drafted the ballot initiative. I collected over 400 signatures, and I got the ordinance put on the ballot. Unfortunately, the initiative failed, but not by a large margin. 41% of the vote was in favor of the ordinance. 462 people thought that this was a good idea and voted yes. 462 people is not an insignificant portion of Petersburg's population. It would have passed if 102 people more voted yes. A lot has changed since the 2017 election. The Wrangell Borough Assembly passed an ATV ordinance on May 30th, 2018. You have a copy in front of you. They have basically been testing this for us for the last 2 years in a town with similar climate and similar population. So far, there haven't been any problems. Police Chief Kerr and Joey Boggs can confirm. This ordinance is hardly unique to Petersburg. There are many other larger towns that allow OHV use on their streets. You can operate them just about anywhere in Utah. OHVs are allowed everywhere in Arizona, even including downtown Phoenix. Also, when was the last time you heard of a town that got rid of an OHV ordinance? After the 2017 election, I asked why more people didn't vote yes. The biggest reason seems that people in this town don't like change. This sounds like a big change for Petersburg, but it isn't. The people in Wrangell say that they barely notice them. Not all change is bad. This change is good. This ordinance will improve parking downtown. This ordinance will allow for cheaper transportation alternatives for Petersburg residents. This will generate revenue for the borough. After the 2017 election, people also told me they voted no because they didn't want to have to register their vehicles to plow snow. This seems reasonable. You should amend the ordinance to get rid of the registration requirements for snow plowing. People also didn't like how OHVs will be banned on South Nordic and Hagen Drive. I don't like this either. Those are not our roads to regulate. But the state doesn't want us to allow them on state roads. Safety is a big concern on this topic. There are several things in the ordinance that address safety. All operators must have a valid driver's license. All operators must have liability insurance. All vehicles are required to have lights. All vehicles except motorcycles are required to be equipped with a flag so they are easier to see by other traffic. A motorcycle license is required for all motorcycles. All minors are required to wear helmets. It's nearly impossible to talk on a cell phone while riding an ATV. I understand that some of you may have reservations about allowing OHV use on our borough roads. This does not have to be an all-or-nothing issue. If you don't like certain parts of the ordinance, I urge you to amend it. Make it better than Wrangell's ordinance. Make it work for Petersburg. If you're still concerned about safety, then add other safety requirements to the ordinance. If you're concerned about noise, then amend the ordinance to prohibit two strokes. If you're concerned about teenagers racing up and down the streets, then add language to make it easier for the police to impound the teenagers' vehicles. Police Chief Kerr assures me this won't be a problem. OHV registration with the borough is required under this ordinance. The police want the registration requirement, and people are willing to pay the fee to operate their OHVs on borough roads. I believe this ordinance is good for Petersburg. Please do not ignore the 462 votes cast in favor of this back in 2017. Please vote yes on it. Please vote yes so that we can do this better than Wrangell. Thank you for your time. I welcome any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Burke. Any questions? Thank you for your testimony. Pardon me?
Muted his phone. It's muted.
Did you text him? Okay. Please state your name and who you represent.
My name is Charles Davis. I'm here representing myself today. I think he covered all the points pretty well, and I just have to agree with him. We've got this ordinance in lots of big cities way bigger than us. You see it all the time up around Wasilla and up north. And I think this is the sort of thing that, like you said, is with parking being an issue downtown and stuff like that. I mean, it's very handy. And it's something, you know, that I'd like to take advantage of. The majority of the people that I've talked to in this community, I can't say that I've really found anybody that was really dead set against it. And most of the people I talk to are in favor of it. I don't think it's going to hurt anything in Petersburg at all. I mean, somebody's going to end up having to work on them. Could be that somebody ends up selling them. Look at Wrangell. They got somebody over there that sells ATVs and snow machines and stuff like that. And it's a good part of their business. And any extra business that we can bring to Petersburg would be great. And honestly, it makes a town like this a little bit more unique. If we wanted to live in an uptight city, we'd move to Seattle or something like that. But they get kind of gives it that small town feel that is kind of nice. So I just wanted to back them up today and say that I've talked to a lot of people, and me personally am 100% for this.
Okay, thank you for your testimony. Anyone else in the audience that would like to speak related to items on today's agenda? So one more time, anybody have anything to say about items on today's agenda? Okay. I don't know if you were leaving or coming to the point.
Haven't left yet. Still here. Thank you very much, Mr. Mayor. Jim Stolpe, representing myself, speaking on behalf of Ordinance 2019-15, the OHV ordinance. I support what's put out there for you to look at, and hopefully your support. If you look at it from a tax base, that's one more small, minor generating money system for the city of Petersburg, and that's kind of hopefully the way you look at this program. And the program set up the way it is it's on your own. If you muck it up, that's your fault. There's a piece of paper right there that says, don't drive stupid. So the people can be held accountable. It makes it a little more accountable for everybody involved. So I hope you would give it some serious thought and consideration. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Stolpe. Excuse me. Anyone else in the audience that would like to testify to items on today's agenda? Okay, seeing none, we'll move to the next item on today's agenda, and that's persons to be heard on items unrelated to today's agenda. Okay, please come forward, state your name and who you represent.
Good evening, members of the Assembly and the Mayor. My name is Candy Woodworth, and I reside at 848 South Mitkoff Highway. My husband and I own property at Frederick Point East, and I represent myself. I would like to speak to the Assembly regarding the issue of removing Frederick Point East from Service Area 1. I spoke on November 18th and gave a brief history of the area known as Frederick Point East. It was remote in 1978, and it remains remote today. The City of Petersburg provided no services to Frederick Point East, and when the borough was formed in 2013, it also has provided no services. I think we all can agree on that. So how then did Frederick Point East become included in Service Area 1? I believe it was an administrative mistake. If we look at the creation of Service Area 1 in the Charter under Article 14, Section 14.02b, it states, until otherwise changed, those areas which are, at the time this charter was approved, which were within the boundaries of the former City of Petersburg, shall be included within a service area. Section 14.02b used the former City of Petersburg boundary to create the boundary for Service Area 1. And it just so happens that the area of Frederick Point East had been annexed into the City of Petersburg in 1978. All fine and good, right? Except for one small fact. In the charter under Section 14.04, the criteria for establishing service areas, it states, service areas shall comprise the area to which the services shall be provided. It is an undisputed fact that Frederick Point East receives no borough services. And as the charter states, the creation of service areas is all about providing services. And I believe it is understood that at the present time, the borough does not want to provide any services to Frederick Point East subdivision. To sum this all up, number one, the Assembly's decision to use the former City of Petersburg's boundary as the boundary for Service Area 1 was an administrative mistake. Number two, the mistake has led to an adverse effect on the property owners at Frederick Point East, subjecting them to pay the full operational mill rate of Service Area 1 for service that the borough never provided to them. Number three, the responsibility to correct the mistake in the charter lies with the Assembly. Therefore, I am suggesting that the Assembly take the corrective measure to redefine the boundaries of Service Area 1. In doing so, the Frederick Point East subdivision would be reassigned to what is called an area-wide property tax designation, which is taxed under education only, a 4.33 mill rate in 2019. In light of the fact that Frederick Point East had been annexed into the former City of Petersburg city limits and had the opportunity to vote on bond indebtedness, I believe that Frederick Point East subdivision would probably bear the burden of that voter-approved bond indebtedness, just like anyone else living in the former city of Petersburg. But because of the complexities of this issue, the question of bond indebtedness may still need more research. Thank you for your attention and your consideration.
Thank you for your testimony, Mrs. Woodward. Anybody else in the audience? I know there was one. Celia, did you want to testify on items?
I think we were number three. Was it not?
There's no order, just if you're ready. Yeah, just whoever gets up first.
Is it okay with
you, Kevin? Sure. We do have a five-minute limit, so.
Mr. Mayor, Mark Jensen, Borough Assembly members, and members of our great community of Petersburg, we're here to tell you about a win-win development for Petersburg that is just over the horizon. I'm Nicole Hollingstad. I'm joined by Cecilia Lopez Tavalero. You might recognize the family names as being very long-standing here in Petersburg. We're both property owners here. And, of course, on the Clinkett side, our families go back thousands of years in this area. We are here as representatives of Alaska Natives Without Land. You might be familiar with this initiative, but if you're not, we're here educating and talking with the communities in Southeast Alaska because we're supporting legislation that represents what could be a very important economic driver for the region. This piece of legislation has not yet been introduced as a bill. Once it has been introduced with the support of our delegation, we would like to ask to come back and make a more formal presentation. We will be leaving handouts for you with information. This information now, for the first time, contains the maps of land of the five communities that were left out of the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act of 1971. This is the start of a really important conversation with the communities who have stakeholders in the municipality who will be interested in what happens with that land. So we're eager to have that conversation with interested parties. We're excited about the possibility of these five communities, Petersburg, Haines, Tenneke Springs, Wrangell, and Ketchikan, receiving the 23,040 acres, the township, that they were promised under ANCSA, but has never been delivered. Cecilia will tell you a little bit more about the history of this, but we're very happy to be here. We're excited to have more discussions with you. We know it's going to be important to hear from all interested stakeholders about land around our communities. Thank you, and I'll cede
Thank
to
you.
Cecilia.
My name is Cecilia Lopez Tavalero, and I grew up here in Petersburg, and my parents are Art and Ethelyn Lopez, and they are permanent residents at the Petersburg Cemetery now. I am part of the one of the owners of the property my parents left up on Lumber Street, so we do pay taxes here. But I am happy to share with you, some folks were not around in 1971 when the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act passed. And what that allowed to happen is the building of the Alaska pipeline to settle with the Native communities. However, in Southeast Alaska, we were treated differently because there was a Clinkett and Haida settlement, which was only monetary. It had nothing to do with the land. And so the five communities that got left out, whether you were a village corporation or an urban corporation, each received 23,040 acres of township. So Congress wondered, well, why are these communities left out? So they commissioned a study in 1993. It was called from the University of Alaska's Institute of Social and Economic Research, a study of five Southeast Alaskan communities. They found there was no significant difference between those communities that received corporations and those that didn't. And so we've been seeking to be included in the act because there was no reason, that was the conclusion, there was no reason that we should have been left out. At the time, there was two 50-year contracts with Japan, so there was a lot of logging going around our communities at the time. It's a different day. It's a different age. When we get our corporations, we're not going to go out there and log everything like a lot of people think that we're going to. Our people are more educated. I mean, we're looking to things like carbon credits. We're looking to ecotourism. We're looking to other areas to do business. So we're not limited geographically. So that's something that's good. Modern native corporations work to develop sustainable economic benefits, which benefits the whole community, not just the handful of shareholders. So we look forward to coming and presenting a full report to you all and hopefully get your support as the other communities have received from their shareholders as well. So appreciate very much the time that you've given us. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony and getting us up to speed, and you're always welcome to come and testify.
Thank you.
Thank you. Was there anyone else in the audience that would like to talk to items not on today's agenda? Okay, seeing none, we'll move to board, commission, and committee reports. There are none. Consent agenda items. There's no items on the consent agenda this evening. Report of other officers. That brings us to PMC CEO, Mr. Hofstetter.
Thank you. Phil Hofstetter, Petersburg Medical Center CEO. Just a few items. I want to thank the Assembly and the Mayor on the work session. We thought it was very successful. A few follow-up items on that with regards to the master planning. We saw the presentation with NSC Architecture on that. We're pretty close to finalizing that master plan, but we really need the community feedback opportunity. So really to promote a forum for that community opportunity will be in January. So we'll get some more information out that. That's really to close out that first phase of the report and to look at what that plan came up with as far as locations and then what's the community input from that. Before we can finalize that first phase of the master plan. I also wanted to talk about next steps with the department heads. So we're planning, I would like to probably talk with Steve about scheduling some time with EMS, assistive living facility, and Parks and Rec on some collaborative opportunities too. So we'll look forward to that. I just got back from Juneau. I serve on a committee with the state called the Medical Care Advisory Committee. And it's my third term there, and fresh off the presses there as far as legislative budget with healthcare, it's basically going to be a flat budget year, so there will be no cuts related to healthcare, which is great. The commissioner supports looking at alternative models in healthcare, but without reducing the budget at this time. They also reinstated the adult dental, which was something that our committee heard a lot of. And so that is as a positive. However, we have a lot to do with work on reducing healthcare costs in the state, and PMC hopes to be at the table to provide some opportunities in collaboration with the state to look at some of those models going forward for rural critical access facilities. And the last item is a board meeting this Thursday, if you're interested. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Hofstetter. Is there any questions of the bill? Thanks for your report. Okay, that brings us to Member Lynn. He's going to give us an update on the SEPA issues.
Brian, can you help her? Brian, can you help her? Okay, oh, sorry.
That's well done, Clerk Thompson.
Thank you.
That's pretty high.
She had a magic wand.
Yeah, that's good.
That's great.
You could get more for $8 million.
What I wanted to talk about tonight is we had a Robert Larson and I attended a long day meeting last week on SEPA. Robert would be here tonight, but unfortunately, I got a text a little while ago said he got sick. Otherwise, he'd be here. I want to talk about three different items on there. We talked about budget for next fiscal year. The second item we really talked about was the power cable and our submarine power cable failure. And the third one is the we looked at what we want to do for draft limits and how we're going to draw the reservoirs down next year. So I'll start here since Debbie has it up, first of all, with submarine cable, because I know this is really belongs to, this is Petersburg's problem. If Petersburg went down, we'd be totally on diesel power, and our rates would almost double if we lose the cable. We have the operating cable right now. There's no backup, and so that's what we're looking at. The staff of SEPA did, I think, a very credible job of looking at options and where we're at and what we're doing, and I want to show a number of pictures here that would kind of bring this home to you. This is the cable between Vank and Warnowski Islands. That cable, there's four cables. One's failed. Each one carries one phase, and it takes all three phases on those, all three of those cables to come bring power to Petersburg. This I wanted to show is because I talked about it last time, but this shows it much better. This is the cross-section of what each of those cables looks at underneath the ocean. There's an outside cabling all the way around each one. There's a casing on it. There's another casing inside of that. That is all paper rolled up under 40 pounds of pressure, fluid filled. Inside of that is your conductor. And then this is fluid filled inside of there in this tube, and that's what dissipates the heat. That cable, and Debbie, would you move to the one that shows the four cables? I think it was the... Keep going. No, keep going.
Scroll down. I believe you scrolled down.
Remember, it was a separate.
Okay.
I want to come back to this.
So this
submarine
cable.
Yes.
Tab. There we go.
I don't know if you can see this real well, and I'll try to get out of the way. This is Bank Island, Warnowski here. This is the two ends of the cable. The cables we're talking about that are laying on the ground are these four cables right now. The one that has failed is this puppy right here, this one that's on the outside. The cable failure lands here, the cable failure's here. That's about, we have 2,000 foot of cable. It happens at about 2,100 feet. So we don't have enough replacement cable, we don't think, to go that distance. Since I talked to you last time, we've hired a consultant, an industry consultant on this, and he's raised a number of issues. And since then, we did a bathymetric map of this whole area, so we have a pretty good idea. We can pinpoint this, but we can't tell you exactly where that. We can within a foot or two, we can tell exactly where that break is. It goes around the doggone knob. There's a knob underwater right here that it goes around, and it's right in there, but we can't tell exactly where, even from all the sophisticated technology we used. Somebody asked me today about insurance. We do have insurance to cover this, but we can't tell. Insurance depends on what the cause of it was. And we cannot tell from all the work the staff does what the devil caused that problem right now. So maybe we could if we pulled it up, but right now we cannot tell. So the answer to the question is we don't know whether insurance will cover it or not, but it's a great big ticket item. The other thing we've discovered when we did the bathymetric map is we've been overlaid with the GCI's cable, this cable right here. And it's over top of all our cables. We have first right, and GCI's been notified we've got a problem, we're going to have to do something with it. To the answer to the question, I don't know yet. We just don't know. They've been doing a lot of exploration, and to date, we can't tell you the answer to that. How we're going to deal with this, nor how GCI is going to respond to us. Debbie, if you would move to that, to the one that you had up previously, I'd appreciate it. Yes, that one. The expert has told us that he's asked a number of questions. He has a number of concerns, and what this shows is this is a kind of a bathymetric map of the depths from the surface down, but the cable comes from the service, it comes down right, the fault's about right here. And then that cable drops to the bottom, although it's not right on the bottom. It comes up along here and then comes back up to the service. Here, it's buried, and we can't tell, the staff can't tell from all the work they've done how deep that doggone cable is buried. The industry standard is if it's buried more than 3 foot, if we pull it up, we can't just repair the cable. It ruins the cable. So, but we don't know how deep that thing's buried here. In addition to that, the expert tells us that he's concerned that here, that we might have had, even though we shut that off on both ends, we might have had water intrusion here that would have seeped down to this point right here. You can't tell until you pull a cable up, so you just don't know. And then, Debbie, to pull the last one up, and I'll keep going, cuss. Yeah, whoop, back down a little bit. Yep.
Hey, Bob, can you refer to the page that you're talking about?
Jeff would like to know what page you're referring to.
Oh, I'm sorry.
This is page six.
Page six, Jeff.
Did you get that?
Thank you.
Yep.
Yeah. What I'm on now is they went out to take a look at cost estimates of what it would cost to repair this cable. Under our permit, we are required that if we put another cable down, we have to pull the cable up. So we don't have any choice. And there is a significant cost to that. And then we also found, the staff found, there is a couple experts available to repair one of these. If you can, after the picture I showed you earlier on the cross section, can you imagine how to splice that thing? And that's the problem. We found a source, it's in Japan. Can splice that cable. And there was the only group that we have found in the world that can do this. So we'd have to bring them over, we have to pull that cable off the bottom, and we're talking, if we had to pull it up and remove it, we're talking about $1.5 million, plus or minus, just to remove it. To repair it, and our move-in, move-out costs are somewhere around a million and a half. Don't know exactly yet. We also looked at, and I won't belay you with some of this, but this has to do with the size of the cabling. What I didn't realize when we first did that, and the mayor may have remembered, but the cable that puts down, it is down there now, is about twice the size as what we really need. So one of the thought processes was, if we had to put a new one down, what would we put down? Well, we could go with a smaller cable, a 69 kV cable. And if we did that, our cost, obviously, from this comes down substantially. What this shows is we've had bids of cable replacement from a couple of these firms. We still have one, Fukurama, to come. But these are the estimates we have currently from the contractors. And what we're looking at is installation costs of about $3 million. We're looking at removal costs of $1.5 million. We have move-in and move-out costs and permitting costs. We got to go back through the permitting process with NIMS, with the Corps of Engineers, and those costs. We don't know much yet about some of the details about what kind of requirements would be made if we had to make those changes. But anyhow, a low estimate, 69 kV line, about $6.3 million to replace this doggone thing. That pretty sizable amount of money. Was committed to Robert and I that we will, as of the March meeting, be able to make a decision on which way we're going to go so we can move on. Oh, the other thing I do need to mention is that no matter what we do, we're looking at least, we're going to be, we have those three cables down, but it's going to be at least 20 days estimate to do the replacement on that. We wouldn't be on, as far as I know, we wouldn't be on diesel power, but at least we would be, if something happened, we would be, but we're not expecting that. One of the questions asked also was the terminals on each end of it, Are they, would they be compatible with the new cable that put down? Because the new cable that put down, the technology is everything else has really changed. What has changed to is that there's all three phases in one cable, and the cable is much smaller, so particularly if you went with a 69 kV line. And so in that case, I lost my thought on it, though. I went totally blank on myself here. I'm sorry? The size of the cable would be much smaller than this, and it would be much easier to put down. But the question was, by somebody, was would it be better to put two cables down rather than one, since we have a chance of losing the other? And that I can't answer. You know, it's yet to be determined. The staff has, I think, done an extremely credible job of trying to pin this down. And so I'm very confident we have support of the other two communities to fix this. The costs are going to be something. How we do this, I don't know yet. That's going to have to be done in the next 3 months. I'm fairly confident with the technical expert we've got, looking at different options. One of the board members, I think, kind of summed this whole thing up that, wouldn't it really be better if we put in a new cable? Because there's so many unknowns here. I showed you the problem with the burial, or I told you the problem with the burial. I talked about the problem that there may be water intrusion in that cable. And even if we splice it, there's still a risk that we don't get the splice right. So the question is regardless, would we be better off putting down a new cable? And I think that's where the board's at. What is the, that we're going to have to look at? And before I move on to anything else, I'll open it up.
Do you have a question, Brandy?
Yeah, you said that the new cable would have all three in it, so you basically would have a complete backup.
Yes, so you have a complete backup if we do that. Technology is really, I'm impressed, really has changed on it.
But if we can only have four cables in the water, even if we put the one down that had all three conductors in it, we'd have to remove one of the single phase lines?
Yeah, we'd have to remove the one I showed you earlier, mm-hmm. that is damaged. We'd have to remove that out from under the
back. Is there any talk at the board about getting the permits? Are they working on getting the permits now?
Yes, we are.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
Okay,
so. And they've made contact. I just can't tell you exactly where we are today, but the answer is yes, we've made contact, and I still got some concerns about NIMS and what we'll have to do with it, but we'll see.
Taylor?
And you said that the this smaller cable, it would be cheaper to put in, correct? And we don't currently use the load on the big one. What percentage about would we be at on that smaller one? Because I know we're maybe even looking at a new hospital, which will probably have higher power requirements and... do we want to
give you an idea? The power coming that SEPA brings to Petersburg to our pool out there is 40 kV.
Okay.
And so this is 69 kV. So we have, we have extra power.
Still plenty, even if we went with the smaller. Okay.
Okay. Any other questions of Member Lynn, or you have more?
I have. Let me move to the next item if you don't have questions on that. I have two other items. We approved a deficit budget for the coming year, which we're going to have to go back and visit in March, again, based on what we come up with here. And our deficit budget stands at about $800,000 right now for a number of things. We lost because of the fact the reservoirs were down and we could not sell power south, our revenues were down. It was $2.9 million this year. Significantly down. And in addition to that, we had agreement to pay back to both Wrangell and Petersburg a little over $842,000 in diesel burn. So our revenues are substantially down. We've got to rebuild revenues. There's no way around it. Last point I'll make is the reservoirs are back pretty well full. We're selling power south, which is a really good thing. And right now, in that respect, we looked at all kinds of different models on predicting weather patterns and what might happen. They're calling for a warmer, wetter year coming up. We will see. That's all I've got. unless there's questions.
All right. Thank you, Bob, for the update. And we'll move forward. The next item is the mayor's report. I'll wait till we get the magic screen spoon out. And, oh, you don't have to use the spoon. That's nice. Okay, that brings us to the mayor's report. It's a short report. We're seeking letters of interest. The Assembly is seeking letters of interest from borough residents to serve on the Public Safety Advisory Board until the October 2020 municipal election. Letters of interest may be mailed to Clerk Thompson at Box 329, Petersburg, Alaska, emailed to dthompson@petersburgak.gov, or dropped off by the clerk's office in a municipal building at 12 South Nordic Drive. For more information, please contact Clerk Thompson at 772-5405. And to continue on a standing tradition that was started, and possibly even before Mayor Dwyer, but that's as far back as I go, is, and I would like to proclaim a half-day holiday for borough employees on Tuesday, December 24th, 2019. Merry Christmas, and thank you for your efforts throughout the year.
Thank you.
And also, one last note, Merry Christmas and Happy New Year to the entire community, and I hope everybody has a safe and happy holiday. If there's any questions about the report, just ask away. That's my report. Okay, seeing none, that takes us to the manager's report. Okay, Steve.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. This time of year, I also do a little, something a little special. I ask all the department heads to put together some items of, you know, things they're very proud of, you know, from the standpoint of accomplishments, and, you know, basically some highlights for the year and why they, you know, a reminder of how special a place Petersburg is. I'm not going to read the whole report. It's actually going to be published in the pilot, but I'm going to hit a couple of them just for the sake. Jim put out, you know, how proud he was of the police department and the continued community support and partnership that he has and the police officers have. This includes tips. This includes just working with the officers and going through all of the time that they did where they had some staffing issues. The volunteers on the fire side continue to dedicate a tremendous amount of time to this community. We ask an awful lot of these people, and yet they continue to make sacrifices in their personal lives to train and help other people in their time of need. We certainly couldn't do without them. Let's see. Sheilyn was, you know, we all know what a great job she does, but bringing in the consultant from the Fox Group really made her feel really good, because when he walked away, he basically tried to steal her and said, you know, very publicly that, you know, if he was still in that business running large assisted living facilities, he's exactly the kind of person that he would love to have. The bottom line when the report came back was, you know, Sheilyn and her staff are doing a great job up there taking care of our elders, and it was really nice. It made her feel really good to have that reassurance. From Carl, you know, they had some challenges with the long diesel burn and what that did to the employees to be able to cover that. And he was very proud of his staff and the absolute fantastic work that they went through to keep us in heat and lights and so on. And from the motor pool and the streets department, they kind of had a pretty eventful year. We had the fire at the motor pool, and, you know, both motor pool and the streets department, you know, evacuated the building, moved all the tools over to a temporary location, did a great job working with everyone to make that workable for this winter, and, you know, now moving forward with the potential repairs of that building. He just wanted to say thank you to all of the staff and the public as well that have to, you know, that interact with us on getting through all that. And, you know, the replacement of the baler. And we've had some retirements, which is, you know, well-deserved. We lost some really long-term employees. We've got some new folks in place. They're doing a great job. And, you know, the one wonderful thing that talks about this community is how, you know, some of our ex-employees in that area have volunteered to help, you know, mentor the newer guys. And, you know, it's very much appreciated, and it shows you what this community is all about. And in Chandra's world, kind of a similar thing. We've had some challenges in Parks and Rec. She's had a lot of community support coming out to say where they can help, and we're working through all of that. Just basically, you know, one of the big ones is the whole partnership with Rotary to put a new playground in at Sandy Beach and how that's going, thanks to Desi and all the folks involved in that. So anyway, that's just a couple of the things that'll be in the paper for anybody interested, and we'll go from there.
Okay, any assembly members have questions of the manager? Okay, thank you, Steve.
You're welcome.
Back on track here. That brings us to unfinished business, which there is none this evening. So the next item on today's agenda is new business. Does anybody need a little break, or should we just continue on?
Continue on.
Looks like we're continuing on. Okay, the first item under new business, Ordinance 2019-15. This is an ordinance to amend Petersburg Municipal Code to allow for the operation and use of off-highway vehicles on borough-owned and maintained streets, highways, or ways open to the public and located within the jurisdiction of the Petersburg Borough. I'd entertain a motion to adopt this ordinance in its first reading.
So move.
Second.
Motion is made by Member Morrell, seconded by Member Norheim. Any discussion? Member Norheim.
Well, I would like to see this pass for all the reasons given by the people who gave testimony on it. I didn't even think of an ATV shop opening up to repair the vehicles. That was, I mean, that's promoting a new business right there. And I'm pretty sure that's what we're supposed to be doing. So that, and then I guess I had misgivings about, or maybe that's not the right word, was that the downsides I had been told was, well, they're hard to see. Well, so are people on bikes and motorcycles, and they're allowed on the roads. And they're allowed. Also are diesel trucks and motorcycles, and they're allowed on the road. And the vote was close. And most of the people who had voted no really, that I had spoken to, same as was stated, that they weren't really hardline opposed to it. Some of them were, but the majority of them really weren't. They just, I guess, didn't like change, as was stated. And the fact that Arizona allows ATVs everywhere, even downtown Phoenix, like, really? But we're not going to? Why exactly? I don't see any real safety concerns, although I did read this Wrangell one real quick, and I have to say I like the part about the helmets required, and that'll probably get changed later on if it passes through this one. I think it's a good idea. If you're riding around on an ATV on the road, you should probably have a helmet on. But okay, that's why I'll be for it.
Member Lynn, you have...
Yeah, I have a number of questions. One I have is for the chief. And what's the difference? I don't have a copy of the old ordinance. What's the difference between what's being proposed now and the old ordinance?
Okay, Debbie and I went through this, and it looks like there's no wording for it to go to voters. And then some of the wording was changed a little bit, but it's still pretty much some of it's there. But remove the ATV safety course requirement. You don't need that, which I have no issue over at all. We increased some of the fines. It used to be a $25 fine for minor operating or riding as a passenger on an OHV without helmet required. So it was $25. We upped it to $40. Failure to use passenger restraints, it was $25. We upped it to $40. And then the operating an unregistered OHV, it was $35, but we made that the same price as what the two-year borough registration would be of $100 to encourage people to actually.
Okay. Oh, speaker?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Those speakers don't work?
Well, Jeff hear him? That's what we're concerned about.
Jeff, can you hear the chief? Okay, thank you. That was our concern.
Okay.
You're good.
Sorry. And the operating an unregistered OHV, like I said, it was $35, but we made it $100 to encourage people to register their vehicles or their OHVs. Other than that, I don't think we identified anything else that was much different in it.
We did?
I thought that's what it was before. Okay. Yeah, insurance. So the no insurance then was the state, the no proof of insurance or no insurance on one, is the state is 500. So we just matched it to what the state would be. We don't want people riding them around without insurance.
Didn't the old one relate only to service area one and not to the whole Metcalf Island?
Mm. Well, borough owned and maintained streets. So
yeah, we don't maintain stuff outside service area one.
But well, this one, if I read it correctly, relates to all of Metcalf Island, and we have no, and it says all the borough approved roads or something to that effect. It says in there. And so if we have no borough-approved roads, why are we going outside Service Area 1?
Well, there are borough-owned roads outside of Service Area 1. Not very many, but there are.
So then we're going to require people to have to go through this process for all those other roads that are out there, which that one doesn't make sense to me.
What doesn't make sense?
Any other call? Are you done, Mr. Lynn?
Take your time.
Yeah. You know, what I'm saying, if we have a few borough-approved roads outside of Service Area 1, if I read this ordinance correctly, that if I own an ATV out there, then I have to have this process to run it outside, even on roads, even though they're not borough-approved roads. Because earlier we had a discussion about snow plowing. And then there was no, the argument was none of the roads we were snow plowing are borough-approved. And so I guess I'm trying to understand, why are we putting it out there when, one, we can't, we don't enforce it, and two, we're putting a burden there we don't need to be put there. Rhetorical question, but yeah. That's one that will probably put me down for a no vote on it. I mean, I don't see a need to go outside, or it needs to be some revisions on that. The other part is that I feel, you know, I come into town and you see a lot of people using ATVs on roads just to, you know, along their sidewalks, just to pile their sidewalks to do that type of thing. But yet, and they don't want to use it for anything else. And the same thing with some of the businesses downtown. They use it to do their own private plowing, that type of thing. But the way I read this ordinance, they're going to now be required to do it. And I don't see a need to do that myself.
Okay, Member Stan Greger.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I got two things here. One is a point of information, then a point of clarification. So there's a point of information. In 2017, the voters, all voters in the Petersburg Borough, voted no on the OHV by a significant margin, not insignificant. It was 669 no to 466 yes. That's approximately 60-40, 59 point blank to 41 point. You can easily round it 60-40. That's a pretty healthy margin. So that's the point of information. As a follow-up to that, I gladly signed Mr. Burke's petition during that time. I thought it was great to put it before the voters and make for robust discussion. My clarifier, though, is kind of a point of clarification from Member Norheim, if he's willing and able. Anytime the will of the voters makes a decision, I feel like we need a really compelling reason to override the will of the voters, whether it be by 2 votes, 30 votes, or over 200 in this case. And so following your logic, Member Norheim, what compelling argument are you following that we should override the voters, the Petersburg voters at this point? Just help me make up my mind on this thing.
I probably won't help you make up your mind. Basically, who exactly is going to be hurt by this? Now, the other day, I'm pretty sure it's illegal to ride a dirt bike down the street. It would fall under an off-road vehicle because it's not a motorcycle. Now, that vehicle drove down the road. I'm fairly certain it's illegal for them to do so. And nobody got hurt. I heard it. I was like, oh, that shouldn't be on the road. But I wasn't hurt by it. There was no downside other than minor noise. And that's exactly what this stuff would do. So when we voted it down, there was not a compelling reason for it to not be approved from what I saw.
Member Norton, we don't get to choose as members of the assembly. The public.
I think we don't need to get into a dialogue between two assembly members. We should address
Fair
through
enough.
The chair.
I'll get back on point then. Well,
thank you.
May I finish my thought, Member Tremblay?
Finish your thought.
Fair enough. There's no compelling argument on that. Like, I would encourage you, or another member of the assembly to vote to amend this ordinance to put it before the voters once again, because I'll gladly vote for that. This was a member decided, an issue decided by the public before, and with respect to the voters, I think that's the only appropriate way to proceed. So I'll definitely be voting no as it is, as there is no compelling reason to override the will of the public, but again, we'll gladly vote yes on an amendment to put this before the public. Thanks.
Member Rural.
Okay, so from what I've heard from most of the people that voted no, it was because they were kind of chapped that they were going to have to register their vehicles to plow snow. So like Mr. Burke said, why can't we just amend it so that if you're using it to plow snow, you don't have to have it as a registered vehicle? Obviously, that would be when there's snow, yeah, I must have a plow on it. I mean, there's some common sense behind that. And that was, I mean, I've talked to several people that was their reasoning for voting no. So I think that if we were to amend it, it's going to have to go before the public for two other readings. You know, if there's a bunch of people that are completely opposed to it, I think that they'll speak up. But I think that that was the biggest concern of most of the people that I heard that voted no.
I think I share the concern of overriding a recent relatively decisive vote, and so I would only be comfortable putting it on the ballot, not making the decision at the assembly level. I don't think that's appropriate. And so if you want to make the change to have it be something that would go on the ballot and have it be focused on that, because my also issue is not just running the same thing again and again until eventually it passes. I want it, you know, having it be substantively different than what went to the voters before. We don't necessarily ask them the same questions repeatedly. So that's my main concern with this. So as it stands, I don't think it's appropriate for the assembly to make that call.
Member Mucci, do you have any input on this ordinance?
Well, I've got plenty, but I'm going to, rely on the voters of the community to tell me what to do. And if they say it's not a good idea or whatever, I'm going to side with them. I mean, if the ordinance needs to get changed so that, we can kind of maybe get on board with it or eventually get it on to the ballot. So this ordinance here, I can support it.
Okay, thank you. Any other member Morrell?
Yes, can I make like an amendment?
A motion to amend?
A motion to amend. I would like to make a motion to amend it to allow snow plowing and also put it before the voters. Can I do that?
So that would be two separate amendments, I would think, would be the proper way to do it. Yes, there's two topics.
Which one should I do first?
Whichever you choose.
Can I do the motion to allow snow plowing in for an unregistered vehicle? That's what I'd like to do.
Member Morrell would like to make a motion to change it in this ordinance so a vehicle, if it was plowing snow, would not have to be registered. Is that correct?
Yes.
Is there a second?
I'll second
it. Yeah, I'll second it, Mr. Mayor.
Okay. Motion been made by Member Morrell, seconded by Member Mucci. Is there any discussion on the amendment? Go ahead, Jeff.
Yeah, I'm just going to vote no on the amendment. I'm going to vote no on the original ordinance. I mean, if there's work to be done on this ordinance, then I think the folks that are trying to move this forward should just take a little bit of time and kind of bring us something that is more concise, and we don't have to spend a lot of time trying to amend an ordinance. And if it eventually is going to get to a vote of the public, I mean, I think it needs to be clearer than it is right now. So I'm going to vote no on the amendment, and I'm going to vote no on the ordinance. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Any other discussion? And then we'll have my input. Member Stan Greger?
Sure. Thanks, Mr. Mayor. I'll be voting no on the amendment also, not because I don't want people plowing snow with their four-wheelers. Chief Kerr's predecessor, Chief Swihart, was very clear on the intent of the law as it is. The police are not driving around issuing tickets for people plowing snow, and they won't. We want to be a good community. We help our neighbors. You know, we haven't had a whole lot of snow this year, which I kind of like, but I know when it is, I'll hear four-wheelers go around plowing out driveways, and I'm always grateful and kind, and that was never the intent of the law, Chief Kerr, and you cut me off, Chief Kerr, if that's the case, but that is not what the police are going to be spending their snow days doing. So I don't see a need for this amendment right now. Thank you.
Okay. Any other testimony by the assembly members? If not, I will, I've kind of on the fence, but I don't think I'm going to support this unless, and I would support it going to the ballot. The people voted in 2017 by a 40-60 vote to not approve this. And even if there is some, has been some changes and of people's positions on that, I think they need to be able to voice their opinion on it. I was thinking about voting yes potentially on this so it could get to the second reading and have a public hearing on it and get some public input, but I still don't think that is the same as a public vote on the ballot. So, and I would encourage the people supporting this ordinance to try to figure out how to reword it or however it needs to be worded to try and make it so it's more clear and try to get it on the ballot and then let the people decide. So that's my input. If there's no other discussion, will the clerk call the roll? This is on ordinance 2019-15, first reading.
The amendment.
Yes, we're on the amendment.
We're doing the amendment first.
All good.
Clerk, call the roll.
Thank you. Thank you. Bob?
No.
Brandy?
Yes.
Jay?
No.
Taylor?
Yes.
Jeff?
No.
Mark?
No.
Chelsea?
No.
The amendment
fails. So is that it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay, I missed one on my tally sheet. Okay, so the amendment fails. Now we're back to the main motion as it was presented to us. Clerk, call the roll.
Is there no more amendments?
Is there any more amendments? Would you like to? Okay.
Okay.
Clerk, call the roll.
Brandy?
Yes.
Taylor?
Yes.
Jeff?
No.
Mark?
No.
Bob?
No.
Jay?
No.
And Chelsea?
No.
Okay, the motion or the ordinance 2019-15 fails 5-2 in its first reading with Member Morrell and Member Norheim in support. So that brings us to the next item of business, and that is ordinance 2019-16, an ordinance amending the official zoning map for Service Area 1 of the Petersburg Borough to rezone a portion of Lot 1 of Section 9 and Lot 9 of Section 4, the Copper River Meridian, Petersburg Recording District, and there's parcel numbers, but it's located at 112 Scalbay Loop Road from industrial to light commercial. I'd entertain a motion to adopt this